Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. So I love chatting with the veterinary students, and Jessica Hirsch is in the house from Tufts University, second year veterinary student. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you know, and I love following you on Instagram. And tell everyone about your handle on Instagram. We'll start with that, actually. So let's talk about your username on Instagram and how that came to be.
So I go by disabled.dvm on Instagram. I had to take a medical leave of absence last year in the middle of second semester, second year. I had a spinal surgery, brain surgery. So there's a lot that has left me disabled over the years. I have a connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Some veterinarians may know that as the stretchy skin disease in dogs. I recently heard that it also is pretty prevalent in cats as well. So that has left me with a lot of disabilities that make working in veterinary medicine a little bit more challenging, but not impossible. So I wanted to kind of showcase that there really is a place for people with disabilities in veterinary medicine, especially since this is, you know, the elite of the elite in this profession. You know, only I think 10% of students who apply get admitted to veterinary schools. So I really wanted to show veterinary students and veterinarians that it's okay to not be perfect. And you don't have to hide that part of yourself. You know, disability is a private issue, but it doesn't have to be a secret issue.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so how has that been for you in terms of school? You had to take some time off for that. How has that been for you overall during a pandemic too, nonetheless?
So it actually worked out pretty well pandemic wise. Normally with medical leave of absences, you know, especially since in veterinary school, you have to take a full year off. I got really lucky with what they did with deferments and student loans, because normally, you know, you'd get that 6 months grace period and then you'd have to start paying back your loans. I got really lucky where they were deferring loans anyway. So I never had to make payments on my student loans, which made, you know, a medical leave of absence a lot more financially available for me, which is not always the case for other veterinary students. You know, when you are disabled or you're taking a medical leave of absence, it's typically because you're not well enough to go to school, which means you're not well enough to work and make payments on student loans. So that's really tough to deal with. But I was very fortunate that the pandemic did come when it did. You know, there's silver linings to all kinds of situations. But I did have to go through my surgery, you know, by myself in the hospital for 3 days. But, you know, after quarantining, I think it was like 4 months at that point, I was kind of excited to have a vacation from everyone and just be able to sleep, because I'm an introverted person. So I was very happy to have my time away and just me, my hospital bed, and some really great hospital food. But yeah, coming back from the leave of absence has been a lot more challenging than I thought it was going to be. It's really hard to get back into the swing of things. I mean, imagine a lot of people struggle with, you know, you take a month off over winter break and, or, you know, a couple months off for their summer breaks, and it's, you know, fivefold compared to that. You're taking a full year off. There's a lot that you have to do on your own, reviewing the material that you were already taught if you take a medical leave of absence, you know, when you're in the middle of school. So it's been a little challenging. Definitely takes a lot of self-discipline to get back into it. And that's something that I'm still learning.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because, I mean, listen, going to veterinary school is difficult, period, end of story, let alone going through like physical and mental challenges too, make it even more challenging. So, but what you're doing too in the social media space and creating awareness and for the veterinary profession has been outstanding. And share with our listeners a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. I am predominantly focused on really just making people aware that there already are people with disabilities in veterinary medicine. There's a way to navigate veterinary medicine that doesn't make us any less of a member of a team. Just because I may need an extra hand doing something, or, you know, just a stool to sit on during surgery, it doesn't make us any less of a productive team member. And so I really wanted to showcase what I've been going through, my story with taking a leave of absence in veterinary school, but also showcasing what's available to students. Right now I'm working on a project of kind of creating a mini guide for students who are thinking about taking a leave of absence, who are navigating the world of accommodations in veterinary school, because veterinary school is very different from undergrad. And that's where a lot of people, they don't know what accommodations they need. They don't know what accommodations to ask for. And not every school is very forthcoming about what's available to them. A lot of the times it is just, you know, let us know what you need. But a lot of the times, if you don't know what you need going into veterinary school, it can take a significant amount of time to get those accommodations set up. Mm-hmm. And in veterinary school, you know, going 2 weeks or a month without accommodations, I mean, that is at least probably 4 exams that have already gone by that you haven't had accommodations for. I mean, time goes super fast in veterinary medicine, and especially in veterinary school. So it's really important that we sort of get ahead of everything. One thing that I've been pushing with is encouraging schools to have accommodation processes set up for very common disabilities or chronic illnesses. Not really creating them on the fly as students come in, but I firmly believe that, you know, every school should be equipped with the tools to successfully graduate a student with hearing loss, or a deaf student, or a student in a wheelchair. Those are pretty common disabilities, and they're are strategies out there. There have been veterinarians out there who have graduated and are practicing successfully, but yet some schools still don't have those strategies in place for those students.
Yeah. Where do you think we are at? Do you, I know we could do better, of course. Do you think that it's getting there, or is it, does it need a lot more momentum? Like, what are your thoughts?
I think we are definitely getting there. In the last year, with all of the social justice movements, I think there has been an awakening to institutions and schools that change is necessary. And it's not just one aspect of social justice where the change is necessary. I think right now there's a lot of momentum. And what I'm trying to really do is keep that momentum going and not lose the steam behind it. Because, you know, things at rest stay at rest, those in motion stay in motion. So if we keep everything going, hopefully change will come sooner than later. You know, and that's really what I think is important to realize, is that we're only in veterinary school for 4 years. And if you have to wait a semester or two to get things rolling, or for change to be there, you know, you're not going to really see much of that change while you're there. Right. So for me, a lot of the change at institutional levels, we need students to realize that even though they may not benefit, if they can push forward, they can change the lives of so many students to come, change the profession as a whole. Really just advocating for veterinary medicine to be inclusive. I mean, it's a very exclusive profession. But I think we're on the right path. I really do think that schools are trying, and I don't want to discredit that. I think there is a lot of room for improvement, but I do think the majority of veterinary schools are really trying to listen to their students. They just aren't exactly sure how to go about it, especially right now we're seeing with the mental health crisis in vet schools and veterinary medicine, that workplaces and schools aren't exactly sure how to help. A lot of the times the solution is, you know, let's throw together another wellness night. But for a lot of veterinary students, you know, they don't have that extra hour to take away from their vigorous study schedules. You know, it's just another email in their inbox that is really just making things almost a little bit worse. And I think the main way to really combat the mental health crisis, especially in veterinary schools, is by listening to your student body, what they're saying would be beneficial to them, how their lives could be improved, instead of, you know, just throwing out the typical pizza party, free unhealthy lunch, or, you know, I think there needs to be more done than just attaching the hotline number to the end of your email.
Oh, I'm so glad you shared that too, because that is eye-opening. You think that you want to try to walk the walk a little bit by offering like another Zoom, like, you know, happy hour type of a thing. But all you could probably think of is like, I need to study. Like, I can't really even focus and enjoy myself because I have like 5 exams to study for. So yeah, it makes it tough. So I'm glad you shared that. And, you know, we were just talking offline about COVID-19 and how, you know, there is a silver lining to what we're seeing with this pandemic with the curbside check-in. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, the disabilities and handicaps kind of a things that are out there. What does that look like to you? Do you think we should go back to the way things were? Has this kind of invigorated some change that's needed?
I think vet school has now become so much more accessible as a result of COVID-19. You know, before, especially people with chronic illnesses, it was, if you're sick, you push through it. If you have a cold, you come in anyway. You don't take off unless you're on your deathbed. And now with COVID-19, you know, there has been such a mindset shift. And it's unfortunate that it took a pandemic for that to happen, but I'm oddly glad that it did, because now there is an understanding of, you know, when you're sick, you should stay home, and that you can still be productive at home if you're well enough to still work, but you don't want to worry about, you know, affecting other people. And that being said, a lot of people with chronic illnesses are just more comfortable in their home that they have already curated to fit their specific needs. I mean, with Zoom University now, the potentials, there's just endless potential for what we can do. One thing I'm working on advocating for at my school is keeping Zoom around instead of, you know, all of our classes before were recorded. But sometimes those recorded lectures, they take forever to get uploaded, and then you're running behind. You don't really get to participate in active discussion. And veterinary school does have a lot of mandatory attendance classes. But with Zoom, professors can still take attendance. You can still be part of the discussion, and you can still be present for live lectures, ask questions during the lectures instead of watching the recording. And then the instructor gets bogged down with emails from people who weren't in class, but still have questions. Mm-hmm. So I really think keeping, you know, implementing a new normal would be really beneficial, not just for the students, but the instructors as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I was thinking of you because I was at a veterinary hospital that was curbside, and they were talking about how their handicapable pet parents enjoy it and prefer it because it's easier for them to actually have communication, to be not have to necessarily go into the building, worry about the doors being open or whatever. They come to them and they show them the results. They take pictures on their phone showing them x-rays. They get invoiced in their car. So I do think, to your point, that there is something that to be said of how we can adapt to this new normal and continue to keep that going, especially for our handicapable clients, as well as our associates and team members.
Oh yeah, I see a future where we ask the client their preference, you know? Mm-hmm. And it can even go into so many more avenues with animal behavior. If the client's, you know, we've seen it where a lot of dogs or cats do better when they're away from their owner. My own dog, I mean, he's an anxious mess. He does so much better away from me. And so asking the pet parent, you know, are you comfortable coming in? Are you able to come in? Do you want to come in? Does your pet do better with you in the room or out of the room? I think there's so many different ways that this curbside medicine could be beneficial to really everyone involved. And it's just showing how many options for customer service are out there.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Okay, so I want to ask you a fun question. So, I mean, just in 2 short years, we're going to be welcoming you to the best profession on the planet. You're going to be our colleague. So Where do we think we're going to see the future Dr. Hirsch? Have we decided what our some of plans are? I know it's hard to tell, but.
Oh my gosh. So I have been, this has been like the question of the semester. I thought I knew exactly what I wanted to do going into veterinary school. I was like so set on animal behavior. I wanted to do a behavior residency. And that's still, you know, it's right around 50-50 now. But this year has been challenging for me, both in my human family and my fur family. My cat just had a surgery. He had a hemilaminectomy because he was one of the very few cats with intervertebral disc disease. So super rare, but now I am very, very intrigued by surgery, general surgery, because I will never forget the way that it felt, especially curbside medicine. You go to the ER and you're just handing over your fur baby and not knowing what's going to happen. And with his specific case, I know we'll get into that a little bit more in a little bit, but I was so just terrified. I was prepared for a euthanasia. That just seemed where it was going to go based on his presentation, and for a surgeon to be able to not only give me my cat back, but give me my cat back who has the potential for, you know, regaining 90% function back. That is just, that's a gift that I would love to give pet parents. And so now, you know, surgery has very much piqued my interest.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, tell us about your kitty though. I know he's doing well. You've posted such great, I'm learning from you, honestly, because to your point, it's rare with what he has going on. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, he's a little zebra. So even his surgeon, you know, before he went into surgery, he prepared me. He was like, you know, this is my first surgery doing this on a cat. He was like, I didn't even know before today that this happens in a cat. So what had basically happened was I came home from an 8-hour work shift and I found that his cat bed that he had just been hanging out in for the previous few days was flipped over on him. And he had, you know, already lost some weight and seemed to be not eating. We did full body rads at his GP. I mean, we worked him up for everything. We thought maybe it was metabolic, that he was having abdominal pain. And then when I found him with the cat bed flipped over on him, I picked him up, tried to prop him up, and he immediately, his back leg slid under him. Tried to stand him up again and realized that he had no function in his back legs. So immediately I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is a cat. His back legs are down. This is going to be an ATE. So I was in the car within 2 minutes, threw a sweatshirt on, and we were going, you know, 80 miles an hour on a 40 mile an hour road, rushing to get to Tufts. And thankfully he did have pulses in his back legs. Although he wasn't ambulatory, he did not have any function in the back legs. He also did not have deep pain perception. The decision was made to go ahead with an MRI since he had just recently had full body radiographs that didn't show anything. And we found that he had a herniated disc. I believe it was around the T5L1 area. And so, you know, going into the MRI, they had pretty much prepared me, you know, this is likely lymphoma. This is likely neoplasia. That is the top differential, considering it's not an ATE and, you know, you just don't see IVD in cats. It's super, super uncommon. So I was fully preparing myself that this was the end of the road for my 6-year-old male neutered cat. And that was really, really hard. The thought of losing him was especially hard because going into a little bit of my story, which I haven't really shared on my Instagram yet, he is such a special cat to me. He and his litter mate, Bonnie, they have been there with me since I was 19. They have seen me through thick and thin. And there were times in my life where I did struggle with suicidal ideation. I was hospitalized at one point. It took until about 6 months ago for me to be diagnosed with bipolar depression. And there were times where the only reason I was still alive was because I didn't know who was going to take care of my cats. I didn't know what was going to happen to them. They're both asthmatic. You know, I didn't think anyone was going to take care of them in my life the way that I would, you know, yearly RADs and $300 inhalers and all of that. So they really were the reason that I'm still here today. And the thought of not doing everything for Clyde, it was, for me, I was going to take out more loans. I was going to go into massive credit card debt, whatever it took for him, because he had saved my life and it was my duty to return the favor for him. So we went ahead, we proceeded with surgery, and it was a really awesome success. I mean, he recovered so much faster than we were ever expecting. We didn't think he would get deep pain perception back until probably 2 weeks post-op, and he got it back 2 days post-op. You know, he was trying to walk upon discharge. It was just so amazing, and I'm so thankful for his surgeon, who ended up actually being the husband of a doctor that I work with.
Oh, wow.
So it was a happy little small world, yeah. Kind of, it all came together. And I couldn't be more thankful to have him, even though he laid on my face at 2 o'clock in the morning last night. But, you know,
it's okay.
I have a newfound appreciation for that now, where right. I'm glad he's here to be able to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's got such a wonderful cat mom for you. So that's amazing. So thank you for sharing that. So where can we find you on Instagram? One more time.
I'm at disabled.dvm at Instagram, also on Facebook now.
Excellent. You're on Facebook. You're doing amazing things. So to our listeners, you need to follow her. She's a beacon of light and inspiration, and her stories and testimonies are authentic, real. And I can't wait to welcome you to our profession as a veterinarian. You're going to be fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. You're too kind.
No, my pleasure. Jessica Hirsch, everyone, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Always stay pawsome. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.